Hi, my name is Birgitta Jónsdóttir. I'm a politician and an activist for the Pirate Party in the Icelandic Parliament. I am also the chairperson for the International Modern Media Institution. And right now I'm looking into ways to tackle the big privacy issue, how we can actually ensure that people can have their online privacy regarded as a human right as our offline privacy.
What kind of journey took you from poetry, the kind of unlocking and opening of the soul to the world, to privacy?
Well, okay, so like in 1995, I was working for Iceland's first internet advertisement office, which of course went bankrupt because they were way ahead of their time. And I started to develop websites, and I started to publish my poetry online. And I actually organized Iceland's first live broadcast, video broadcast, in 96. And then it just sort of, you know, I was working with the people that were sort of the pioneers in internet issues in Iceland. And I started to work with people all over the world, and I sort of found my tribe there, which is always changing and shifting and expanding. And then I sort of accidentally got elected and accidentally created a political movement. And now I'm accidentally, well, it was actually very deliberate to create a pirate party, because I felt when I was in the parliament for my other political movement that established 2009, when we were going into re-election this year, I realized there are no geeks running, so I have to create a geek party that knows when we're getting dangerous ideas about legislation, that it is dangerous. Like, there were discussions about creating, and it was actually nearly through the parliament, a law that would stop Icelandic credit cards to be able to be enabled on websites like Betsson, because they wanted to make sure that Icelanders couldn't gamble. And that's just very dangerous, to give the credit cards companies that sort of power. And they didn't even want it themselves. But nobody understood that this was a bad idea, except me, because, you know, I come from this background. So that's why I decided to create a platform with geeks. And we got three people in out of 63, 5%. So, yeah, it's just, you never know where you're going to be tomorrow. There's a saying, like, you never know where you're going to be sleeping tomorrow in Iceland. So I guess I have no idea where I'm going to be tomorrow, actually.
Where are you today, apart from sat next to a noisy road in Graz attending the Elevate Festival? What's going on?
Well, I'm like currently still working on the Icelandic Modern Media Initiative to make sure that the ministries will carry on writing the legislation that I tasked them to do in 2010. I worked with, you know, and one of the reasons, I guess, that I was sort of thrust into the international arena was because while I was a member of parliament, I was also volunteering for WikiLeaks and helping them getting the collateral murder video out and acting as a spokesperson for them. Because, like, when I joined WikiLeaks as an active volunteer, we were getting the biggest leak in human history into the Dropbox. And then, of course, my life changed forever. And I've been a subject of some sort of investigation by the US Department of Justice. And all my sort of digital data is being scrutinized, even if it's supposed to be hidden. Or private. So I even took the US government to court to protect my data, but I also took them to court because of an addition in a new in an old law called NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, sometimes called Homeland Battlefield Act. And basically the new addition to it, which is very dangerous, allows the US military to arrest anybody anywhere under the suspicion of terrorism. And since, you know, I've been labeled a terrorist like on two different occasions for two different organizations. I feel very directly under threat. And these people just vanish. You know, they don't have access to a lawyer or a court. And this can be just, you know, ordinary activists or journalists. And journalists should really care about it, but there's been complete media blackout on it. And I sued the U.S. government with people like Chomsky and Daniel Ellsberg and Tandrew Bolin and others. And it was very strange to me how that was not reported properly.
How do you feel about the current conversations that are hitting popular culture, for example, the news coverage of Snowden and WikiLeaks, of course, Julian Assange?
Well, I think that Snowden, like, there is no whistleblower today that has done more service for humanity in every country of the world as Snowden has, because while we were all happily sharing stuff on Facebook, the NSA was actually paying Facebook and Google and other social media companies and Microsoft and Apple to create backdoors into our privacy. And it sort of almost feel like an impossible task to turn this tide around, because we have already given so much of our rights away. And we would never have, like, I was one of the paranoids that was aware of this. And I was sort of like, many of us were, people would think, oh my God, she's sort of like going over the top because she's saying that the government is just going into all our private data without our knowledge. And not only that, you know, they are, you know, reading our emails and they're seeing what we're buying and they're figuring out programs that can actually collect all this information into one neat little package that has a complete psychological profile of you and everybody you know or have ever associated with. And then it turned out it was all true because of Snowden. And so I think the world owes him, you know, and in particular now there's a lot of discussion about Angela Merkel being upset that Obama's administration has been snooping into her own private phone calls. Then maybe Germany, if they are serious about they are upset about this, why the hell do they not offer Snowden asylum? Why don't they give him a German citizenship? Because without him, she would never have known. And the same in the UK and all the other different countries that have discovered that their, you know, political leaders, their diplomats, and the most vulnerable citizens, the sources and the journalists, are all under probing and mass surveillance. And so what Snowden has actually done for us, which is so scary, is that he's basically shown us that you, as a journalist, could not protect your source. The doctor cannot ensure confidentiality between him and his patient, and the medical records are probed into. The lawyer cannot protect his client. And so the very fabric, the very foundation of our democracies are gone unless we do something about this. And I don't want the internet to be balkanized. I don't want to that each country has its own internet simply because it's so easy to turn it off if you get a very a bad government. We can never make policies about the fabric of our society based on today. We have to think ahead. And this is what I'm sort of trying to do right now.
How well do you know Snowden? How's he faring?
I don't know him. Like, I've talked to him once because I was trying to help with him getting I was trying to help him to become an Icelandic citizen. But I don't know how he's doing right now. It must be very difficult to be in a country that has basically said, we will only give you asylum if you do what we demand in relation to having access to all this information. And also being under the sort of, there are these assumptions that he has given the Russian government and the Chinese access to the information that he has. I highly doubt it. But he is in a very vulnerable and difficult situation, and it is very dangerous to be in Russia. Russia, with their with their history of human rights violations in the last years, is not the safe haven for any whistleblower.
Now, you're actually featured inside the new WikiLeaks movie. You've read the script. You actually assisted in pulling some things out you thought maybe detrimental to the story, not because they were true and you didn't like them, but because you thought they shifted the story somewhat. How do you feel about the movie now that it's out and how it's been received?
Well, so I agreed to advise on the script because I wanted to try to make sure that the message would come across that whistleblowers are important and what that we are now in the middle of this information revolution, and that what WikiLeaks was a great service for humanity. So when I saw the script the first time, I was furious. That's the script that WikiLeaks got hold of and was leaked, because it had a scene in it that was very dangerous, and it was about, it was a complete fabrication about Iran and the impact of the leak on a source or a spy for the US government in the relation to the nuclear program. And, you know, today with all this tension about nuclear programs and Iran, And I just basically said, you know, if this is going to be in it, I am just pulling out completely. But I also, I talked to both Nick Davis and Daniel and said, are you aware of this scene? Have you looked at this? And they're like, oh, well, you know, aren't you aware of how dangerous this is? And they hadn't really thought so much about it, but then they agreed that that I could tell the scriptwriter that this scene could not be in, that they had to find another solution to whatever they were trying to say, which was basically that, you know, in, that the Department of Justice and all the Secret Service was scrambling to protect people, you know, because there were names that in the cables that could have gotten into trouble, and some did get into trouble, but they didn't get killed or tortured, I hope. And I don't think there has any, been any proof of it, but people did get into trouble, obviously. You know, if you are walking into the U.S. embassy and volunteering information, you're not going to be the most popular person in Iran, for example, or any other country that's sort of not on best terms with the U.S. government. But so I took that. And also at the time, the director and all the main actors, you know, the actress that plays me, she actually plays the Red Witch in Game of Thrones. I don't know, that was deliberate to associate me with a witch, but and then so Benedict Cumberbatch was there, and he was actually right in the middle of all these conversations with Julian at the time, and he was very concerned. It was very genuine, and I remember there was an argument between him and Daniel Brühl about, you know, Daniel thought Benedict was taking this way too seriously. It was just the film, and you know, he shouldn't like be sort of engaging himself so much in this. And so, you know, I can say from just witnessing it that they were actually on our side, you know, and particularly Benedict and the director, Bill. They were absolutely on our side. And they wanted to make sure that it would be a story, you know. And we have to remember, this is Hollywood. This is never going to be a documentary. All the scenes with me, and I didn't even put an effort into try to fix my scenes except one, where like there was, they had already taken it out. Somebody leaked to me my scenes. All the actresses in Iceland that they were trying out, one of them leaked the scene to me. So, and it was an awful scene. And I was like, to the scriptwriter, like when I heard that, I was like, talk to me now. Because they were going to have me and the rest of the guys sitting in a hot tub discussing collateral murder, and it was like, this is wrong. You know, you cannot do this to me or the rest of us, because it's just disgraceful. Anyway, so, but they were all genuinely wanting to support me also with this Iran scene. So in the end, that scene was cut out, and I know that there was a lot of changes in the spirit of the script because of both Bill, the director, and Benedict, they were very concerned to make sure there would be some balance. But obviously these are based on two books that are sort of divorce books. So, you know, books that should not have been written at the time. In particular, the book by Daniel Domscheit Berg, because he was writing it as a defense. And it's like when you go in a divorce, you are always going to justify your side of the story, and you're going to pull out all the worst about your previous partner because you are in a divorce scenario, and it just, you don't have a balanced view, and that should never have been a basis for a film, you know. But I just wanted to do some damage control. It might have been wrong and might have been right, I don't know, but you know, I wanted to make sure I would try to, and I spent most of the time actually trying to humanize Julian, even if we're not good friends anymore. So.
So you mentioned sides a moment ago. Should somebody be listening to this and be on your side? What should they do now? What call to action can you give for those kind of people?
Get off Google. There are other good alternatives, like, you know, Google Duck. Get off Facebook. If you are a person that want to be able to share photos, private messages, and you know, have stuff about your family and friends, Facebook is not a secure place for that. And they're on the market now. People have to remember that. Facebook has actually changed a lot after they went on the market. And they have gone even further, if that was even possible, with violating you. There are good alternatives if you're an activist or if you are a person that wants to build communities. There is a place called Evolve Society. It was created by one of the founders of Indymedia and one of the Occupy Wall Street main players. I'm working with them and I'm hoping that I can actually find a way for them to register and host everything in Iceland or in another relatively much more safer place than the US. You can, I think Twitter is fine. Get off Gmail. There are alternatives being built, like MailPal. Make yourself aware that you can actually find ways to encrypt without using some difficult stuff like PGP. PGP is not for normal people, but there are ways there are now lots of projects trying to enable people to do this in a sort of more user-friendly way. If you need to communicate with somebody about sensitive stuff, do not do that in a digital format. Do not use your phone. Do not send SMS. Do not write emails, because it's not safe. And until we've found a global solution and local solution, just be aware of that you do not want to write anything that you're not prepared to defend in a court or see on a billboard.
Now, finally, you're not locked in an embassy or hiding in a temporarily friendly country. You're out there working. Where can people find you should they want to contact you?
If they go to my Twitter handle is Brigida J, so BIRGITTAJ. They can also go to brigida.is, and all my contact stuff is there. Even my phone number. Do not call me unless you need to very seriously talk to me, because I don't have an assistant, and I really, like, I get so many mails, great emails with great ideas from wonderful people, and I'm so sorry I can't reply to all of you. You can find me, I've created a profile on Evolve Society. I'm trying to get off Facebook. But if you want to go there, you can find my English version of me there. And yeah, I'm easy to find. And do make yourself aware of also the immi.is project, because that was to make Iceland into a safe haven for freedom of information, expression and speech based on the 21st reality we live in. And pressure your government to honor and make sure, find ways that that your constitution is not broken by a foreign government like your best friend, the USA.
Brigitte, thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure.